This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 271 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com, and joining me on the line via a very dodgy Skype connection from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Sorry, who is this?
It's a bit like that.
Bruce who?
Yeah.
Oh, I talked to you months ago on the podcasty thing. I remember now.
That's right.
Well, we record this every 3 months, do we? That's how it works.
Feels like it, doesn't it?
It does.
So how where were you? Friend?
Where was I?
I came all the way to Ballarat and you didn't show.
Oh, trouble and strife was unwell. Oh, I should translate for people overseas. My wife was unwell, so I couldn't come to visit.
Right.
And then last week, I had the most diabolical of web experiences with Skype. It took me, let me tell you how I had to fix my Skype connection, which refused for the first time in years to contact you.
Yeah.
After pulling my hair out for about 3 days.
Right.
I deleted the app, which I'd done already a couple of times, but I deleted the app. I reinstalled it. I created a new Skype account with a new password. Same problem.
Right.
Okay. So then I had to create a new Microsoft account to match the new Skype account. So I did that. No joy.
Yeah.
So I then deleted the app again, reinstalled the app again, then had to apply for a new password because it wouldn't accept the password, added a new password, had to go into Microsoft account to agree that password was now right, and here I am. Seamless. Absolutely seamless.
Do you know what's interesting about that whole story?
Nothing.
No, the fact that Skype is now owned by Microsoft, and that's pretty much the standard operating procedure for fixing Windows. It's like uninstall and reinstall about 5 times, and eventually you'll get a good, clean install that actually works. So they've taken the business model that has worked so beautifully for Microsoft for so long
and installed it.
And superimpose it over Skype. It's awesome.
I saw a wonderful advert today, and it was the Microsoft Explorer, the Internet Explorer symbol.
Right.
And it said, if Microsoft Explorer is bold enough to ask for you to use it as your preferred internet search engine, you're brave enough to ask that girl out.
Nice. Oh, dear. So... What's that mean happening in your? Oh, you're kidding! Yeah, hello. Microsoft heard us slagging them out.
A very long night.
So, what's been happening in your world since I spoke with you last?
Nothing anywhere near as exciting as yours.
Okay.
So let's talk about you.
Okay. All right.
How was your big adventure, dude?
Mate, it was great. We had an absolute ball, but it was
back to me.
It was extremely grueling, a lot harder mentally and physically than I had anticipated.
Why physically? You're driving to a spot and standing by your car.
Yeah, no, it wasn't just that simple, unfortunately.
So you had to carry your camera bag.
That too. So you're up at 5:30 every morning. You go off to breakfast. During breakfast, they're quite often there would be a briefing every morning, and quite often in the briefing there would be instructions have changed for stage 2. You know, instructions 19 through 26 have been replaced by these new instructions that are hanging on the wall, so make sure you get a photo of those before you leave breakfast, you know, otherwise you won't know where you're going when you get there. Because they have a 24-hour car who travels a day ahead of the pack and looks for obstacles that, you know, have since cropped up that are going to pose a problem to the route that the rally's meant to take. So they ring through any changes that need to be implemented. You're trying to take photos during breakfast as well as eat your breakfast. And then it's, you know, race off, jump in your car, head off out after the zero car, which is meant to leave an hour prior to the pack, and try and find yourself a good location to shoot. And you could quite easily drive all the way through the first stage and go, yeah, there's really nothing here that's awesome, so let's push on into stage two. Uh-huh. Now, the problem is, what we very quickly realised as early as the first day is you cannot shoot two consecutive stages. Because if you find a good spot and you set up, first car comes by, you go click, 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 and, you know, the cars all come through at one-minute intervals. By the time the last cars come past you an hour later, the first car's halfway into the next stage.
Yeah.
So you can only shoot stages 1 and 3, yeah, 2 and 4, or 1 and 4.
So if you go straight ahead to 2, you're going to 4.
That's exactly right. If you find nothing in stage 1, then you've written off stage 3 by default. You know, so
it's a chance to take, isn't it?
Oh, mate.
But then again, if you settle on 1, 2 could be awesome. You miss it because you've got to go straight to 3.
Exactly. Hey. Exactly. So Arthur, the guy who organises the rally, I mean, he would point out things on the guidebook and he'd say, oh, look, I think there's a really good spot here. And he meant well, but he's a 60-year-old guy who's not a photographer.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, because he used to be a rally car driver, he thought of things as being interesting from a driver's perspective, but not necessarily from a photographer's perspective.
Which is going past at 100 kilometres an hour.
Well, actually not quite. A lot of the things that he pointed out were areas where the cars had to go slow. And the problem with where the cars go slow is they don't throw up dust or mud or water.
Oh, you know why?
Why?
Because they're going slow.
That's right. But the problem with that is it doesn't give you a sense of action or movement.
Do you know why?
Because they're going slow.
You might as well take flights into the parking lot before they leave.
That's pretty much it, you know. So we were looking for spots where they could at least be, you know, throwing up some dirt or some mud or some water so that you at least got a sense of action, you know. So long story short, we had a great so I was telling you why the days were so grueling.
Yes.
So you'd shoot a stage. Let's say we found something in stage one. We've written off stage two by default. So what we would then have to do is punch in the GPS coordinates for the beginning point of stage three, let the GPS get us off the rally course of stage one at its earliest convenience, get us back onto a major road, and we would then have to drive, you know, flat out to try and get to stage three before the field. Now, the field would finish stage two and then have a half-hour lunch break, and quite often we'd get to stage three with a 5, maybe a 10-minute lead on the field if we were lucky. You know, and so we'd then, race off, you know, we'd grab our lunch and jump back into the car and head straight off into stage three to look for a spot. And the thing is, we had the handheld UHF radios, which are good for about 5 to 10 kilometres in a straight line, depending on obstacles, right? Yeah. So as we're driving along, we can hear squelchy, squelchy, squelchy static, which tells us the pack's probably 10Ks behind us. And then as that squelch started to materialize into actual voices that we could understand, we would know that they were getting closer. And based on the strength of the signal, we would soon work out, okay, they're only a couple of Ks behind us. We've really got to stop and set up whether this is a great spot or not. Otherwise, they're just going to overtake us and we've missed everything. So you do that. You wait for the last car to come through. Then you jump back in the car and you head off to the town that you're staying in for the night. You've got to go and check in with race control to tell them that you made it to town. Then you go to your motel. Check into the motel. First thing we do is set up the laptop, grab the memory cards out of the camera, start importing images into Lightroom. You then got to very quickly pick half a dozen images to send off to the media liaison person via email because they want them straight away.
Sure.
You'd throw the same half dozen images on your own Facebook feed. You'd then have to pick 50 or 60 images to run in a slideshow during dinner. So while those images are exporting to JPEGs, you're jumping in the shower and having a quick scrub and getting dressed into some clean clothes because you're covered in dust from the day of standing beside rally cars belting past you at, 80 to 100 Ks an hour. jump out of the shower, grab the laptop, jump back into the car with your cameras, head off to dinner. You're trying to eat your dinner, but they're doing speeches and giveaways, so you've got to be getting up and taking photos of that stuff in between bites of your meal and a swig of your drink. You get back to your motel room at probably 10 to 10.30 at night, then got to import all the images that you photographed during dinner, as well as dump all the video that we shot across the day to the laptop. And then the last thing I would do before I fell into bed was set a backup going of everything from the day to an external hard drive because I wanted redundancy.
Yeah.
Just in case anything happened to the laptop.
You had Adam with you, didn't you? Wasn't that redundant for that?
And so, yeah, you're falling into bed at like 11:30 at night and then, you know, you're up again at 5:30 the next morning and you do that 9 times in a row. So it was pretty full on.
Jeez.
But it was great fun.
Yeah, I mean, look, yeah, you slightly forget about the pain and all that sort of stuff. I was talking to a young mum yesterday who's just had a baby a few weeks ago, and a daughter in the same school as me, and we forget how painful those first few months of the child are, and I think that's why we have another kid.
Yeah,
because you forget about it. You go, oh, it wasn't that bad. It's like this thing. You'll slowly forget about it, and then next year you'll go, oh, you know, it wasn't that bad. Let's do it again. Oh, no, I remember now.
That's exactly what I said to Adam, because he said to me, you reckon you'll do it again? And I said, yeah, look, if you asked me that today, I'd be swiping your head off. But I think after a year, the pain will be forgotten, and I'll be keen to do it again, you know.
Good stuff.
But of course, now I'm knee-deep in actually trying to put all the product together.
The product.
So I've got to produce 60 individual photo books because each team gets a photo book that's customized to their team. So it's not just one photo book run off 60 times. Cut together a 10-minute video and do DVD slideshows for each day's images. And throw all that onto a DVD. So, yeah, the next 6 weeks is looking very busy.
So, are you offering mugs and mouse thingamajigs and phone covers?
No.
Why not?
Because no, couldn't be. I don't have time. I've just got to deliver the product that I've been commissioned to deliver. After that, then I can think about maybe offering extra product.
What a nightmare.
Look,
you want to earn some serious coin doing this too.
It's okay.
I mean, I'm talking serious coin. I'm talking tens of thousands.
Yeah. Look, as grueling as it was, I really enjoyed the experience. I learned a lot as we went. We almost lost Adam Davidson.
Oh.
Did he tell you about that?
No.
Right. So,
a roving reporter nearly carked it, did he?
Okay, so what happens is after the last car, the last competing car enters any given stage of the rally, because there's 4 rally stages a day, there is what's known as a sweep vehicle.
Yeah.
And the sweep vehicle's job is to run the course after the last competing car and make sure that everyone got out alive. Right. So the second rally day, which was from Marimbula down to Sale, I photographed the second stage and Adam got a lift with one of the competing cars that were in the lead through to stage 3. And I'd basically said to him, look, just wherever you see a spot that you think's going to work, tell them, guys, this will do, drop me off here. And, make sure you got your UHF radio with you and then, shoot all of the other cars as they come past. And then when the sweep vehicle comes past, you can get a lift with them into town, into Sale. So off he goes. I shoot, stage 2. And this was... On the very first day of the rally, I got a puncture.
Yeah.
And because it was the weekend and these are small country towns, there was nowhere for me to get a spare tyre. So I ended up having to travel all the way from essentially Maruya, which is sort of even further north than Marimbula, all the way to Melbourne on a space saver tyre at 80 kilometres an hour.
600k or something.
Yeah, at least. Because I got the puncture on Saturday afternoon and it was Monday. Actually, no, it was Tuesday morning before I got a spare tyre in Melbourne. So I shot stage two on day two while Adam's caught a lift off to stage three. I then exited stage two and just made my way straight to sail because I missed stage four. So I thought, okay, well, I've got stage two. Adam's got stage three. We've at least got a couple of stages covered for the day. So I head off to sail, check into the motel, and then head off to dinner. And around about 6 o'clock-ish, I suppose, I sent him a text saying, we're in room number 20 or whatever the room was in the motel, so that he would know where to go when he got to town. But I think I sent him another one saying, but we're at dinner now, you know. He sends me one back, says, I'm still on stage three. I went, what? He goes, I've been out here for 2.5 hours. It's cold. It's raining. I've run out of water. And I went, what the hell? And he goes, the last car came past me about 45 minutes ago, but there's been no sweep.
Oh.
And I went, oh, shite. So I've rung the sweep car and I've said, where are you guys? And they've gone, oh, we're just about to leave the end of stage two and we're going to head straight to sail. And I said, well, hang on, Adam's in stage three and he's relying on you to pick him up. And they went, oh, just as well you rang because we weren't going to run the stage. We were just going to go straight. So poor Adam ended up being out in the cold and the rain in the middle of the forests around Orbost for 4 hours. It was about 12 degrees at that stage. So poor bugger was frozen and soaked. The sweep vehicle went in and got him. And by the time they got to, you know, the club where we were having dinner, it must have been close on 9 o'clock.
So no dinner.
No dinner, or just scraps that were left over from dinner. So
that's what he deserves.
I thought you'd have That's something to say. So I did say to him, I said, mate, I am so sorry. We will not let that happen again. So,
yeah, we won't pick you up next time. We've got a sweet car come through. Forget about it. They're the physical challenges, the mental challenges. How'd you go photographically? Because this is, it's a photo podcast.
It is a photo
20
podcast.
Minutes in for nothing.
Look, I'm very happy with what we shot. I'm really happy with what we shot.
I've seen a few shots on Facebook.
Yeah.
Yep. I went to check your website. Nothing on there.
No, there's nothing up there yet.
Something about being too busy with 60 books to make.
Yes, exactly. The interesting thing was both Adam and I had commented to each other that we really needed to practice our panning shots.
Yeah.
And so on the first day, our panning shots were average.
Yeah.
But, we maybe, nailed one out of every five shots, and the other four were quite blurry. By the end of the week, that ratio was reversed.
Oh, excellent.
You know, we were nailing four.
I know
four
panning shots are pretty good. I noticed those. They look good.
Sorry?
Your panning shots look good. I noticed that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, relative to, what you're shooting.
What I did find, and I guess anyone who's shot motorsport probably already knew this, but it was new to me, was the longer the focal length, the better the pan works. I found that panning shots worked better on a long focal length from further back than trying to do them up close on a short focal length.
Why?
The short focal length tends to distort everything. So as the car approaches you, the front end of the vehicle looks, fatter than the tail end of the vehicle. As it goes past you and is square onto you, then both ends of the vehicle are around the same size. And then as it's going away from you, the tail end of the vehicle looks bigger than the front end of the vehicle. And therefore you get this sort of visual wrapping distortion by using a short focal length and panning. when you shoot with a longer focal length from further away, that distortion is minimized. So
what focal length did you find ideal?
Well, I told you that just before I went away, I picked up a brand new, or not a brand new, but a second-hand Sony 70-200 2.8 lens.
You did.
Yeah, so I was shooting with that at full whack, at 200 mil. Yeah.
There you go, Pete. That's a useful tip for people we just handed out there.
That is. My goodness. Apologies all round.
Let's just quit now. Thank you for listening.
Yes.
We'll see you in another 3 months.
Yeah, so some of my... what I thought were some of my best panning shots were the ones where I went and stood in the middle of a canola field or a wheat field or something and wound it out to 200 mil. And the beauty of that was that I could pick up the car, through the lens, maybe 10 seconds before the point at which I knew I was going to press the shutter. There was maybe a nice piece of road where the sun was shining, no shadows from trees.
Yeah.
So I could pan through that 10 seconds and get the velocity of the lens in sync with the velocity of the car.
Yeah.
So that
you weren't accelerating your lens to try and catch up.
Yeah, exactly. Which I found I was doing a lot when I was trying to shoot at, say, 70 mil.
Well, you have to because
it's all distances and angles. So, yeah.
That's another useful tip right there, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's two for two. Hello.
Well, that makes up for the episode we didn't do last week.
That probably makes up about 50 episodes, dude. Two bits of useful information.
Yeah. So, overall, I'm really happy with what we shot. I would have loved to have had you there to do people portraits.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good faces.
Yes. Yeah. And just that it's not my forte.
Yeah.
My people shots were more just snapshots of people through the
environmental.
Yeah.
Sort of, yeah. Yeah.
I think, had you been there, you might have been frustrated by just how fast everything moved. That there wouldn't
at it on a race.
No. But even the evening activities in whatever ex services club we were having dinner, things were just going so damn quick that even just trying to get portraits of people would have been a challenge.
Yeah.
Although I know that you can work very fast, so
I can. But either way, I still want to. I want to have control, and you don't have to have control in those situations.
Yeah.
I can do the whole thing in 60 seconds, but it's going to be my 60 seconds.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. The thing that did prove challenging to me was that there was one particular night where we had to shoot what were called the year participation photos.
Yeah.
Let me guess,
is that for the people who are participating for that year?
Close. It's about how many years you've been on the rally.
So if you've done it for 10 years, all those guys
so
get
we,
together.
Good so up. We started with the newbies for year one. Yeah. Which was the largest group. There was about 30 people in that group. Then year two was maybe 15, 18 people. And it sort of dwindled down. And then the size of the group would expand and contract through various years until we got to year 26, where there was one guy only who's done all 26 of the rallies. Wow. So we got this room, which had these lovely red drapes at the back of the room.
Yeah.
And we had a couple of kidney health banners set up. And I'd said to the guy who was the MC, don't send him in yet. Give me 10 minutes to get set up.
Yeah.
But he'd already had three or four beers, and 2 minutes later, there's 30 people standing there waiting to have their group portrait
taken. Can I give you a tip?
What's that?
Start with the smallest number and work up to the biggest. If you ever do it again, start with the smallest groups you can and build up to the big group.
The problem,
imagine if you had to set what was the problem?
The problem with that was that they knew that the biggest group was year one.
Yeah.
And so they wanted to get that out of the way because they knew that the moment they'd done year one, some of those people were going to head off to repair their cars and do other things.
Sodom.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make stuff easy for me, not easy for them.
Okay. Yeah, well, when it's your first year with the contract, you kind of want to be as accommodating as you can. So,
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what ended up happening was we got rushed into, you know, getting the first image set up. And of course, once we got rolling, then there was no stopping. And what I didn't realize until, you know, we'd finished the night was that the red curtains at the back of the room hadn't extended all the way across behind the banner on the left-hand side. So it meant that when I got home, I had to Photoshop curtains into 26 images just so that I had a nice, consistent background. So anyway.
Joy.
Fun and games. Man. So, look, hey, we learned stuff as we went.
Yeah, of course. That's the great thing about these things.
Yeah, we had a great time. And, you know, if they were to give us the opportunity to come back next year, I know Adam was keen. I'm certainly keen. And, yeah, we'd do it again. And next year we'll pose, you know, some interesting challenges of its own. It's a day longer. It's about 1,500 kilometres longer.
It's a long day.
Yeah.
1,500 kilometres in a day.
Yeah, it's not that there'll be 1,500 k's in the one extra day, but that 1,500 k's will be stretched out across the 10 days of the rally. This year was a nine-day rally.
So an extra 150 a day. See how I did the math? Like that.
snappy, mate. Snappy. There's also talk that one night of next year's rally will require camping.
Sure.
Now, I love camping.
Yes.
What I don't love is getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and having to pack up a tent.
Yeah.
In order to be on the road by 7.
And trying to do your Wi-Fi, your emailing, your uploading.
Yeah, well, I don't think, if we're going to be camping, there's probably not going to be any 3G access anywhere.
Doesn't mean they won't be expecting it.
Well, they can expect all they like.
I'm just going to dig a hole here, see if I can find the cable.
Yeah.
The NBN's going to be down here somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway. Yeah. We will we'll wait and see what happens.
Oh, excellent, dude! It sounds like a fabulous time.
But it was. Yeah. It was very challenging, but a lot of fun.
Good stuff. Yeah. And let's talk about Adam's camera disaster.
So that was the day he was left out in the cold and the rain out near Orbost.
His camera got a bit wet, didn't it?
So what happened was he had his 5D Mark II hanging on a camera strap. I don't know if it was a Black Rapid or another brand, but it was one of those types of straps.
And it fell off.
No. No. It was just hanging upside down.
Oh.
And the water leaked into the battery compartment.
Oh, of course.
So I'm assuming the battery compartment is not as weather sealed as the top of the camera where water would normally be impacting the body. You know, because water normally falls from above. It doesn't normally fall from underneath. So he got to the hotel room and opened up the camera compartment and out flooded some fish and whatever. He fired it up the next morning. It powered on, but he said, I can't change any settings. And so that was the day that we were going from Sale to Yay.
Yeah.
It was Monday morning, and everyone had said to me, oh, you'll be able to get a tyre in Sale on a Monday morning. That'll be fine. So I go to the first dealership, first tyre shop I find. And I said, mate, I need a 225 55R18 for a Nissan X-Trail. He goes, oh, mate, I had a set of those. I sold them on Thursday. It's like, you have got to be kidding me. And so then I go off to all three of the other tyre dealers in town, and none of them had that size. So the tyre powered dude rings Traralgon, which is the next town along, those two tyre powers were affiliated with each other. They didn't have any either. He said, mate, you can try Pakenham, which is right in on the fringe of Melbourne. He said, but they're not affiliated with us. I went, okay, fine. So I ring Pakenham. Pakenham says, yeah, I've got one of those. I went, beautiful. Hang on to it. I'll be there in 2 hours to fit it. Or to get you to fit it, you know. So he said, yeah, not a problem. So we drive into Pakenham. When I get there, I said to the bloke, just how many of those have you got? And he said, I've got a set of four. And I went, stuff it, put all four on. Because the tyres I was running on had done 45,000 Ks, and they probably only had another 5,000 in them anyway. And I figured we're going to do 4,000 in the next 9 days. So
there goes your profit from the trip.
So I said, stuff it, just put all four on and be done with it. So Adam says to me, you know, I live about 4 kilometres from here. And I went, okay, great. And he said, well, I've got another camera at home. And I said, okay, fine. We'll drop around there. You can pick that up. And then you've, you know, at least got two bodies to shoot with. So we went and picked that up. And then we basically made a beeline for Ballarat because they'd cancelled the first two stages of the day from Sale to Yay. So all of the field were just driving along the main roads to Yay, and they were going to do stages 3 and 4. And I figured, well, we haven't got a hope in hell of catching them for stage 3, so we'll just head to Ballarat and, Bendigo, and then pick up stage 4 in between Bendigo and Ballarat. So that's what we did. And when we got to Ballarat, Adam then pulled, you know, when we got into the motel room, he found the hairdryer and he just laid that on the bench, switched on and aimed it into the battery compartment of the camera. And we just let it sit there for 20 minutes. And when he powered it on, he said, oh, I can adjust aperture now. Like, okay, well, that's a start.
Another 20 minutes.
So give it another 20 minutes. So we gave it a little bit more that night, and then the following morning he gave it another 20 minutes, and by that stage it had all dried out and it came good. So he then had 3 bodies to shoot with, but, you know, naturally shot primarily with his 5D again. So
it's remarkable what these things can sustain.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So
there's a little challenge.
Yes.
Add a bit of stress to the trip.
Yeah. So I guess that, I mean, I had never even considered that idea that the battery compartment's probably not quite as weatherproof as the, you know, the buttons and switches on the top of the body.
With all these people carrying the cameras upside down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that it should be. Because, I mean, people put their cameras down on stuff.
Exactly.
All that kind of stuff. So I would imagine, I'll go and check mine out later on and have a squeeze underneath and see what it's
just
like.
Just fill the bath and chuck it in and see what happens.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I mean, you want a new camera anyway, don't you?
Always want a new camera. Always.
So that was an interesting couple of days. Those first 3 days threw up quite a few challenges for us, I can tell you.
Oh, yeah. That's how we all learn, though, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Baptism of fire. But it was great. And we caught up with Evan Shu in Ballarat.
Oh, yeah, Evan, yeah.
Because he's living up there now.
Yeah, he's a bit
donkeys. Is he? Yeah. So, caught up with him and had a quick drink with him before we had to race off to dinner. And then it was off to Mount Gambier, where we had a quote unquote rest day. I don't know who got the rest because it certainly wasn't Adam and I. we were racing around trying to do some landscape stuff. The Blue Lake was green because it's the wrong time of year. There's a thing called the Umpherston or Ulpherston sinkhole.
Oh, yeah, I know the sinkhole. You have done a shot inside there.
Yeah, which is quite scenic, actually, the way set it up as a little garden in the bottom of this sinkhole.
I've done a few workshops down in Mount Gambier and I'm sure we'd just shoot down the sinkhole. So.
Yeah. And then one of the competing teams who... their car looks like the Blues Brothers car and they dress like the Blues Brothers. they were doing a radio interview with ABC Radio, so we had to go and cover that and get some photo and video of that happening. And then we had to get some photos of just, you know, the cars on the streets of the town because the social media person said, you know, try and get photos of them in the towns, not just, you know, belting out through the bush, you know. So,
this is a great rest day.
Oh, yeah, exactly. and then the day after that was the day where they have what they call the Parramatta Challenge, which is essentially they find a nice big bog hole full of mud, and all of the cars have to go through the mud. And basically, there is a couple of trophies for the cars that make the biggest splash and put on the best show going through the mud. So that was interesting to watch. I got absolutely covered from head to toe in mud.
Sure.
Because I was shooting right up close with a...
That's what your 200 mil was for, dude.
No, no. 24 to 70, getting right in there. It was awesome. You know, it was good. So, Adam shot from further back with a long lens. Yeah. Yeah. Look, man, I enjoyed the experience. It was great.
We got
some great photos from the mud and yeah. Anyway,
sounds like a great journey.
It was.
So when you get some more photos up on Facebook, we have to post a few to our Shutterthink wall so people can have a bit of a gander.
Definitely. If people are really keen to see the stuff, you can look for Kidney Health Australia on Facebook. They have a Facebook page, okay. And all the stuff that I was sending to the social media person on a daily basis.
They social media'd it?
They social media'd it. Yes, okay. They did. What posed an interesting challenge on the first day was the social media girl says to me on the evening of day zero, "Oh, after the rally starts tomorrow morning, can we get images of the cars starting the rally by 10 a.m? I was like, "What now?" Because I'd been led to believe that I would simply be required to pass images on at the end of each day, which would be manageable.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, how the hell am I going to do this? This means I've essentially got to stay in Gundagai until the last cars left, because we decided we would shoot all of the team portraits as the cars approached the starting line. So I think I ruffled a few feathers there, because I was asking these people to get out of their four-point harnesses, get out of their car, stand in front of the car for a 30-second portrait, and then get back in their car and redo their four-point harnesses as they were supposed to be approaching the start line to head off on the rally. But thankfully, you know, I think all bar three teams obliged.
Name and shame.
So basically what I had to do was stay in Gundagai, wait for the whole field to leave, then set up the laptop, dump a few images off the cards into the laptop, Wi-Fi hotspot on the phone so that I had internet connection from the, you know, the little park in the middle of town, upload, you know, three or four images to the social media person, and then shut everything down, chuck it all in the car, and then drive like mad buggers to try and get in front of the pack. And of course, I foolishly then set off on stage one, where I should have just set the GPS for the beginning of stage three and just let it take me along the highway. It would have been quicker.
Yeah,
but you live and learn. So
hey, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Oh, fabulous. But I'm sure you can regale us with stories for hours.
I'm sure I could, yeah.
I'm already bored.
I'm sure. to be honest, I'm surprised you've tolerated me rambling for this long.
it's good. No, it's good. It's good stuff. I said, yeah. If you want to succinct it down to the photo lessons, that lens stuff's good. Yeah, they're using the bigger lens for panning.
Yeah,
something some people should practice. I love that. And the reason why,
as I said to Adam, you know, on those days where we were, you know, refining our panning technique and getting better and better at it, I said, although it's not my thing, I now have a renewed respect for Lee Gatland and the photos that he shoots of aircraft. I don't know if you're familiar with Lee. He's here in Sydney. And he's out there with a 400mm f5.6 lens shooting aircraft that are traveling at 200 kilometers an hour down the runway. And he's doing handheld at like a 15th of a second, and they are sharp as.
It's technically called a smart ass.
Yeah. Well, it's the 10,000 hours principle, as far as I can see. You know, he's just out there so damn often.
And look what you achieved in a week.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
You
but
say how much, but your ratio went from one out of five to five to five out of five.
Well, to four out of five, yeah.
Boost you up there, dude. Hey, praise when it comes at you.
Thank you, mate. Thank you. But like I said, I have a renewed appreciation for what Lee does, you know.
Yeah.
he's out there every single day, you know, rain, hail or shine at it. So, you know, good on him for being that committed.
He's so good at it by now, he shouldn't be doing it anymore.
That's right.
Take up gardening or something, yeah.
So, well done, Lee. So, yeah.
Well, good stuff. Anyway. So, that's good. And, yeah, using your hair dryer to fix your dodgy cameras, there's a good tip.
That's it. Yes.
Got anything else on your agenda for this week's episode?
Only the thing, two things that were posted to the Facebook wall. One from Adam.
Yes.
Which was the smoke the images.
Dryer, the
smoke images.
To take it out. You need to take out a patent on a hairdryer camera drying system.
Adam posted a link to this portfolio of photographs of smoke where this guy took 100,000 images over 3 months to compile a portfolio of, you know, maybe 15 keepers.
Yeah.
I mean, the 15 keepers are awesome,
yep.
But I don't know that I could be bothered with spending 3 months and 100,000 actuations of the shutter to achieve it.
Well, I said it's about the average ratio of the modern wedding photographers.
Yeah, true.
Not much difference there. You
know? Yes.
So that was one. What was the other thing you've got?
The other one was from Brian Horton.
Yes.
And this was a...
G'day, Brian. It's down there in England.
G'day, Brian. And this was a link to a story which appeared on BBC.com's website about a new trend in China of wedding photos taken underwater.
Mm.
Glyn, I have a question for you.
Ask away.
What's the single most important aspect of any photograph?
I can't.
One and only, like the single light. Most important thing of any photograph.
Light.
Exactly. What was the crappiest thing about every one of these images?
I didn't look at them.
The light. Like, I love the idea. Like,
technical challenges. Brett Rapp's a diver who uses underwater strobes, and he does similar stuff, but he lights them.
Well, good on him.
The shots are great.
But these were not his shots, were they?
Exactly what it is. You need lights. So imagine if he went to China, I'd be making a fortune.
He probably would. Probably make a killing. Yeah, so, I mean, it was interesting. And the technical challenges are, you know, clearly not for everybody. You know, it would help if you were a scuba diver and a photographer. But, yeah, the light in most of them was just quote-unquote natural light, which is heavily filtered of any red content. it's like any underwater photo.
It makes you wonder what on earth people, you know, why people... Well, how they get these ideas, you know?
Well, I think it's probably a photographer who happened to be a scuba diver who, you know, maybe thought about going into wedding photography and thought, let's just mash these three together.
Yeah.
And, you know, come up with a niche. And, hey, kudos to whoever, you know, got the ball rolling.
He might be taking great shots.
He may very well be, yes.
He/she, not being sexist.
Yeah, exactly. So who knows? Who knows?
That's your two things, is it?
That's my two things.
That's your two.
You?
I've got a couple of bits.
Yeah?
I watched an interesting documentary the other day on a guy called Ron Galella, if you've ever heard of him.
No.
He was like one of the original paparazzi guys.
Okay.
And the documentary is called Smash His Camera.
Right.
And it was fascinating. He basically stalked Jackie Kennedy.
Oh, okay.
Day in, day, just all over. She took him to court several times, restraining orders against him, all this sort of stuff.
Bloody but hell.
His body of work of people walking and doing nothing, but his body of who he shot is astounding. It was like an hour and a half documentary. It was very interesting. So if anyone wants to look into the early days of paparazzi, Smash His Camera on that Ron Galella was fascinating.
Wow. Jackie Kennedy, that's an interesting person to stalk. I mean, didn't they have mafia connections?
Well,
is that the kind of family you really want to get on the wrong side of?
The family, literally, yeah.
Anyway.
Don't mention the mafia, dude. They might come after us.
That's right.
Then I came across this company's launched this new satellite.
Right.
Called Global Worldview 3.
Okay.
Called Digital Globe, which is going to revolutionize location scouting.
Oh, in what way?
Well, when they're allowed in February to finally release the image quality that the thing's almost capable of doing. So they can't release its best quality, but because of military regulations and stuff.
Yeah.
But what quality they can release is supposed to be outstanding, because based on what you can already see now from the scale down stuff they're showing now, you can see people's car doors open.
Wow.
Yeah, you can see that much detail, and this is nothing compared to what it's going to show when it comes out in February.
Wow. Okay, so sorry. So what's happening in February that's allowing them to
deregulation of what max minimum size you can add, a resolution they can show, as in you know, what scale down to like four. I think they can go down to like 60 centimeters now. They're allowed to go down to 30 centimeters of resolution.
Wow. Okay, but how is this necessarily going to be helpful for location scouting? Because it's still an overhead image, which doesn't necessarily give you.
But a friend of mine was looking for, he's seen this photo of these rusty trucks in a field out in country Victoria. Fair. He knows kind of the region where it is, but has no idea.
Right.
Now he's going to be able to scale in massive quality, so he's going to be able to see all the detail and just slowly troll around and find stuff.
But that's the thing. Like, by the time you've zoomed into that level of detail, you're in so damn close that it's going to take you longer to pan around on the image to find the overhead view of the truck than it would to just jump in your car and drive out there.
No, because what if they're not on? Because there's a myriad of roads. This guy's been looking for years.
Right.
But you have to zoom in quite that far to see that. You can zoom out far enough that you can see a reasonable distance, because the resolution is going to be so good.
Yeah, right.
You'll be able to pick up a ruined house as an example, as a fairly, oh, there's a block there. Zoom in.
Right.
Yeah, it'll really, I think, because even when you're zoomed out on these current satellites, you can see the detail's still not good enough.
Right.
But this is going to allow you to be able to see great detail and then zoom into even more detail, which I think is going to be astounding.
Yeah, right.
And all these people are going looking for, signs of aliens and stuff on the planet. They'll have a ball with this stuff. Absolute ball.
Did you hear just a couple of weeks ago that you're familiar with the Nazca lines?
Oh, yeah. My sister's been there.
A new one has just appeared.
What?
Yeah, it was buried under, like, silt. And the silt washed away in storms or something, and so now this new one has appeared.
I've got a book signed by the greatest
by the aliens who drew them.
A woman's been working there. She's been there for like 50 years studying them.
Wow, she must be tired.
Oh, 9 days in the valley was tough, dude.
Yeah.
And any water out there. But she's been there like 50 years, and I've got a book, her book signed. My sister met her out there in the Nazca lines.
Wow.
And bought a book off her and got her to sign it for me.
So what's your sister doing?
No, she was just traveling.
Oh, she was just a tourist at the time.
Just a tourist.
Yeah, okay, cool.
So, yeah, that's kind of cool. She's probably dead now, not my sister. The other woman.
Well, you could have been referring to your sister, knowing how much you feel about your family.
I had close claim to the family, yeah. Now, my mate Stephen Frosty Frost has just taken delivery of a thing called a pixel stick. Now, I'm not sure if you've seen this. This is a new. I can't really. It's a stick full of LED lights.
I remember this. This was like a Kickstarter project.
It was, yes. So it's just come out, and you can program in an image, thing, and it will generate this image
in three dimensional space.
Yeah,
yeah. I remember this.
There's a Flickr group. I'll send you a link through, and we'll We'll put that up on the show notes.
Cool.
They're doing all sorts of amazing stuff.
Yeah, right.
Some crap stuff too. some amazing stuff with this thing. There's one of the Millennium Falcon from Star Wars.
Yeah.
Just floating there in midair.
Nice.
This is kind of freaky. So he's got one. We're going to go out and shoot with that in a few weeks' time when we get some time.
Cool.
For anyone who lives in Hobart or is a freaky film buff,
yeah,
my mate Tim Jones, who owns a store called Perfect Prints in Hobart, his store burnt down a few months ago.
Oh wow!
And he had to relocate a couple of doors further up, but a whole bunch of his film and papers and stuff are possibly heat affected, possibly smoke affected, but he's having a fire sale,
right?
And he's selling this stuff off cheap.
Okay,
so it's just people love the unpredictability of what this. So if you want to play around with some heat-affected film,
get
in touch with Perfect Prints in Hobart. tell them Glyn sent you, get an extra no cents off. And buy yourself something that could be just a little bit unpredictable.
Yeah. Well, that
was kind of cool. Now, I saw an amazingly, as I said before, what weird things people do with photos.
Yeah.
Getting up there with the weirdest. I found this guy who goes to, like, popular locations, tourist locations at night or locations at night.
Right.
Sets up his camera to film the location, so do a long-time exposure.
Yep.
Then he's wired his phone up. So it can trigger a flash gun, okay?
Right.
So he's connected his flash gun to his iPhone.
Yeah.
And then he's walking around these locations.
Yep.
And on the photos and wherever the phone picks up a photograph that's geotagged online in that location, it fires the flash.
Okay.
So he's walking around this scene, and the flash is going flash, 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 and he's lighting up all the spots that someone's taken a photo in this location that's been geotagged.
Okay.
I know.
Why?
Crazy. I don't know. Right. I don't know, but it's so cool.
So is he then compositing all the layers together so that...
No, it's just one layer. It's one long exposure.
Right.
So all he's doing is just walking along, flashes going off.
So it's just essentially light painting?
Yeah, round spots of light on the ground. So you can see the photo where everyone has put a photo. I know.
That's weird.
To go to the effort of pulling apart your phone, to rigging it up to have the thing trick. No, he could be just lying to us. He could be just walking around just pressing the flash button himself and saying that's what he's done. Yeah,
exactly.
But what a wacky idea. So I've got a Vimeo video footage of him doing it.
Yeah, right.
In the show notes as well. Fabulous.
Yeah. Wow.
And my wife was born in Hong Kong. Not sure. Right. But I came across this week some 1950s Hong Kong street photography.
Oh, okay.
And this guy was fabulous. His use of light was just exquisite.
So it was shot in the 50s?
Yeah, in the 50s.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought initially you meant like it was somebody's project that they've just shot in a 50s style. Okay.
No. This is from the 90s. Right. Archive from the 1950s, and this guy was just amazing. Great use of light, fabulous, and a world that's no longer remotely like that, of course.
Which is
pretty cool. And that's probably about it for me. I think we're probably getting running past time anyway.
Yeah.
I've got a couple other bits and pieces, but not worth mentioning. this weekend, not that it helps, because by the time the podcast comes out, it'll be over. I'm doing the Educational Photo Expo in Melbourne.
Okay.
So I'm looking forward to doing that.
Cool.
But next weekend, I'm in Sydney doing the digital playground up at the Lunar Park.
Right.
In Sydney. And so if anyone's up there, I'm up there on the Sunday. On the Saturday, I'm actually filming a bunch of videos for Tamron.
Right.
But on the Sunday, I'm doing a talk there, and I'll be on the Tamron stand doing a meet and greet sort of thing.
Oh, cool.
So if anyone's in the area, come and say g'day.
Yep.
And but I love this. Tamron are getting me to come up and do these videos on the Saturday, and they want me to do a sports photography video.
Right. Well,
I don't do sports. I do a macro photo video.
You need Burke with you.
I don't do macros. Then we do a landscape video. Don't do landscape. It's going to be great.
Just give them that line. I shoot landscapes, but I keep getting people in them.
So in a week of weird stuff, yeah. I've got to do three videos. Well, I've got to do a whole bunch of videos. Yeah. Some I can do because the people, but a bunch of videos on stuff I have no experience in, which is going to be joyful.
Yeah.
But on the Wednesday before that, I'm actually, Ellen Cromer taking me for the afternoon to a photographic college.
Right.
To teach the teachers how to use studio lights.
What?
I know. This is one of the
most. How do these people get jobs?
This is like a $30,000 bloody degree college.
And like the teachers don't know what they're doing.
I don't know.
Jeez.
But of course, studio is my least. My least comfortable area.
Right.
I much prefer flash and natural light.
Yeah.
Flash
as in speed lights.
Speed light. Yeah. So, it's all the same. I know, but mentally, it's. It's a different kettle of fish in my head.
Right.
But it's just funny. So I'm doing these weird videos, doing this weird training. It's going to be an odd week.
Yeah, right.
It's going to be an odd week. So it's kind of strange.
Wow.
I did take two photos that this last week, as I whilst we haven't been recording, that I like the concept of more so than the image. I was doing a natural light workshop down in Ocean Grove.
Right.
And it was the worst possible light. It was just that flat, horrible, just diabolically bad stuff. And, you know, just really trying hard to get anything good out of anything. It was so hard.
Yep.
But then we were walking through an underground car park, and I just put our model under a fluorescent light.
Right.
And the photo was just glorious.
Okay.
Relative to the rest of the crap we've been shooting for the day.
So, white balance wise, did you go to a fluorescent setting to?
Yes, I left it on auto as I always do. Yep.
Right. Okay.
Very fussy about that sort of stuff, as you know.
actually, that's one thing we didn't discuss about the rally.
Yes.
Was
back to you again.
Was about the light.
It's all about you, isn't it?
Was about the light. Because for the first 3 days of the rally, we had just overcast and rain. And what we, you know, we for those days we're going, oh, geez, a bit of sunlight would be good.
Yeah.
Right. But once the sun came out, like once we got out of Ballarat and we're headed towards Mount Gambier, the whole of the tail end of the rally was all sunlight. But the trouble is, the moment you get into a forest, you've then got massively dappled light.
Yep.
Yeah, because you've got all this harsh sun coming through the tree. So it's, you know, bright shadow, bright shadow, bright shadow. Where,
be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, exactly. Where the first 3 days, while it was overcast, I mean, the sky was just like this massive big softbox. So the light we had, you know, although we were standing out in the cold and the rain, the light was actually a hell of a lot easier to work with while it was overcast and drizzly. Yeah, so interesting.
Well, I had the same thing. I was wishing for sunlight on that day.
Yeah.
I drove down in sunshine.
Yep.
I drove home in sunshine.
But that's Melbourne for you,
little,
man.
Little period of day. Just but we'd just about given up. Yeah, it was like 10 minutes to go on the day, and we'd all gone into a coffee shop inside the shopping mall to get a coffee.
Yeah.
And just as we're coming out the mall, the model, who's a local photographer, stood. There's this little spot of sunlight coming through a little window up on the roof of the shopping centre, and just lit her. Oh,
nice.
It's just bad. So we're all shooting at the entrance. No one could get in the coffee shop because that's the only place you could stand to get the right bit of light. We had this fabulous light for like 5 minutes for an entire day.
Nice.
So two great shots because of two interesting bits of light. And then the following week, exactly the same thing. I was cursing the lack of sun.
Yep.
The following Saturday, another natural light workshop in Melbourne, blazing sun.
Oh, okay.
That was so hard to work with just because of its angle. Every shot was so punchy. Now, I don't mind punchy shots. I like a punchy shot.
But they get very contrasty.
But when you try and teach a variety of lessons, it was a little hard to work with. So it's just kind of be funny what you ask for.
Yeah.
Yeah, and exactly. A little bit of one last thing. I shot another D-Day guy last week.
I saw that, yeah.
And, fabulous guy, wonderful. But it's weird because we've got into this building, into his house, and he started rabbing on about this. Look, there's a photo on the wall of this island, and I just happened to be looking at it. He goes, oh, but you don't know where that is. And I've gone, it's just a green bit of blob of land. He goes, it's down near Wilson's Promontory, down the bottom, down to Victoria down there. He says, no one's ever heard of it. I've gone, oh, is it Sunday Island? He goes, how the hell do you hear that? It turns out my wife's ex-boyfriend's father and him are on the committee on their island.
Wow.
His family's, but I've only heard of the place like once, and I happen to remember the name.
Wow.
But another fabulous, but here's the thing. This is the first guy we've come across who enjoyed the war.
Oh, really?
Who just talked about everything in the sense of adventure as opposed to any regret or pain or heartache, you know?
Why do I immediately think of Hightower from Police Academy?
It was just a very different experience. And then I've got some bad news today.
Not Hightower, Tackleberry.
Tackleberry, yeah. the lady who's organising all the stuff was with the Normandy Veterans Association had a heart attack in hospital.
Oh, no.
So her project may be on hiatus for a while, which is very sad. So
yeah.
I hope she gets better so she can give me some more photos to do. I mean, I hope she gets better is what I meant to say. Anyway, I've got a few other things. I'll save them for next week. They're not
cool.
any great value. But yeah.
All right. Well, I shall get
that
those.
That was a bit of a bumper issue for people to make up for missing out.
Yeah.
Four people for like an hour and 20 now.
All right. Well, I'll get some links from you to put in the show notes.
You will.
And if. Depending on how I'm going with the load of work that I'm trying to get through for Kidney Car Rally, I may pop down to Sydney on the Sunday afternoon and catch up with you.
It'd be lovely.
Just for a coffee, if nothing else.
It'd be lovely to see you.
Yeah.
Down and bask in my reflected glory. No.
You won't recognise me.
Really?
No.
Why?
I've lost 8 kilos since you saw me last.
Wow.
Yeah.
How come?
Because I needed to.
It's like 18 pounds, everybody, for those in line. You know, well, here's the thing. I lost 54 kilos in a day once.
You left your camera bag behind.
I'm divorced.
Nice.
Thanks for that. What a weight off my shoulders that was. What were you carrying around your shoulders for, boy? Anyway, well, so... I think I've gained your 8 kilos, so you know that's an economic joke.
Right. Excellent.
Terrific. But if you're in Sydney, anybody, come down to the show. It promises to be reasonably interesting. And some good speakers, and Cannon and Nikon and all those sort of people will be there.
Now, you said it's at Luna Park this year.
At Luna Park, yeah.
Right, so north side of the harbour.
It is. Yeah.
Excellent. All right, mate, well, you have a good week.
Well, it's good night from me, and it's good night from him.
Yeah, we'll talk to you next week.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.